Hi, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, where I explore the science of health, human performance, and ultimate potential. My name is Dr. Greg Wells, and I'm a scientist with a PhD in human physiology. I have served as a professor in kinesiology at the University of Toronto and as a scientist in translational medicine at SickKids Hospital. I've also worked with dozens of Olympic-level athletes through the Canadian Sports Centre Network. In this podcast, I do my best to take complex research and make it understandable and actionable for you to improve your health and well-being and perform to your true potential at whatever it is that you care about the most. In each show, I chat with leading experts in the field of productivity, sleep, nutrition, physiology, and psychology, as well as some of the most exceptional performers across all disciplines. Together, we explore the amplifiers that propel us towards high performance and overcome the obstacles that challenge us. Ultimately, I want to share 1% gains that can make a massive difference in your life. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let me know your thoughts and comments on social at Dr. Greg Wells. All right, let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Great to be with you. And today I'm sharing with you an interview that I did on the Trauma Therapist Project's podcast called Books Read Thrive. And Dr. Guy McPherson interviewed me. He's a fantastic clinical psychologist. And we talked a lot about the new book, Powerhouse, but of course, a whole bunch of other topics as well. So super psyched to share this with you. It's a little bit longer than normal, but I think that you'll find that there's some really great nuggets in here. And as always, let me know what you think on social at Dr. Greg Wells. And if you're listening to this on the week that it is absolutely actually being published, then it is the beginning of September 2023. This is when everything is ramping up again. This is when kids are going back to school. This is when summer is basically over if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. So I hope and wish that you have an incredible fall. Hope that this podcast is serving you and helping you. And if you have any requests for topics that you want me to cover in the coming months to help you get through the rest of the year, let me know on social and we'll try to dig into that a little bit more. Anyway, enough about that. Let's dig into my interview with Dr. Guy McPherson, all about the new book, Powerhouse and Breathing, Moving, Energizing, and Thriving. Here we go.
Welcome to the Books Read Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Guy McPherson. Each week, we're going to be celebrating the books that help us grow, heal, and thrive, and talking to the incredible authors who write them. Books have the amazing power to change our lives. They've certainly changed mine, and I know they can change yours too. Thank you for being here, and get ready to change your life. All right, ready?
Let's do this.
All right, so 5, 4, 3, two, and one. Our folks, welcome back to the podcast. Very excited to have as my guest today, Dr. Greg Wells. Greg, welcome.
It's so good to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Appreciate it. So for Dr. Greg Wells, health and peak performance are personal and professional obsessions. Dr. Wells has a PhD in physiology and serves as senior scientist at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. As a scientist and physiologist, he is focused on making the science of human limits understandable and actionable. To that end, he has authored 4 best-selling books, Superbodies, The Ripple Effect, The Focus Effect, and Rest, Refocus, Recharge. And his most recent book is titled Powerhouse, which we're going to be talking about today. Greg is the CEO and founder of Wells Performance, a global consulting firm committed to achieving the moonshot of helping teams, schools, and businesses become places where people get healthy, perform optimally, and reach their potential. Yeah. Awesome. Welcome again.
Thanks
so much for taking the time to be here. Before we get going, share with the listeners where you're from originally and where you are currently.
Got it. So born in Montreal, Canada, currently living in Toronto, Canada, travel a ton at this particular instant. I'm in Revelstoke, British Columbia, sort of the middle of the mountains in Western Canada, here for a few weeks with my family, getting ready to go back home very soon, but just out here doing a little bit of mountain biking and recharging with the family before we head back and unbelievably start getting ready for school and work again.
Awesome. So as I said, we're going to be talking about the book Powerhouse and everything in there, but how did all this start for you? How did this, because obviously you're on some mission, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I go right back to the beginning, it probably began when I was a teenager. I was a competitive swimmer growing up and loved swimming. I was trying to make the Olympic team and went down to Florida on a training camp and was playing in the waves with my friends prior to a swim meet. And unfortunately got picked up by a wave, dropped on my head, and I broke my neck in a number of different places at 15 years old. So did 3 months of traction, which is uncomfortable and frustrating as a 15-year-old who's used to being physically active, and then neurosurgery to rebuild my spine and my neck. And then obviously all the physiotherapy required to recover after that. Totally fine. Got back into swimming, swam all the way through college. But that really sparked my interest in the human body, which is probably why I got interested in kinesiology in college. I coached as a swim coach for a number of years after that, did my master's and PhD in human physiology after that. And I've just been fascinated by trying to help people overcome really extreme challenges. So now at SickKids in Toronto, lead a research program called Exercise Medicine. So we do a lot of research around helping children with cancer or cystic fibrosis, how to overcome those challenges using exercise and healthy lifestyle. In addition, obviously, all the medical treatments that I'm not involved with, we do the lifestyle stuff, but then also helping other people that are doing challenging things, like either leading a company or trying to run across a desert or be a special forces soldier. So I love working out at the extremes, whether it's on the medical side or whether it's on the human performance side. And that's what we're up to right now, is just trying to help people reach their potential.
So you mentioned kinesiology, which is what, and then physiology, which is what,
for our listeners? So yeah, kinesiology is an undergraduate degree. It's, probably traditionally was known as physical education, but as the teaching element decreased and the more medical element increased, that enabled graduates to go into things like physiotherapy or dentistry or medicine or chiropractic. So it became sort of a foundation for allied health. I ended up going out down the research path, and in my master's and PhD, I did research on human physiology, which is kind of like psychology, which would be studying the brain and how that functions. Physiology is how the body functions. In my master's, I did exercise physiology, so how do we train to get healthier? And in my PhD, I did respiratory physiology, and that was how do we use breathing to enhance athletic performance. After I graduated from my doctorate, I went to Africa for about 5 months to ride my bike, but then I came back and tried to find a job and ended up working in the respiratory medicine department at SickKids Hospital, taking everything that we had learned about sports and how to perform well in sports and applied that to cystic fibrosis, which is a lung disease. So I studied sports that were limited by breathing, like rowing or swimming, where you can't breathe whenever you want. You have to breathe when you can. And that's very much sort of philosophically the same as what goes on in conditions like cystic fibrosis, and then ultimately leukemia as well, which is a blood cancer. And so we just kind of took everything that we learned in sports and applied it to these severe conditions in children. And it went really well. It was super interesting. But that's sort of the foundation and the areas in which we play.
So your interest is on, as you said, kind of the edges of the extremes of human performance. You mentioned special forces, which got my attention. My brother was in the special forces. What do you do there, or what have you done there?
Yeah. So what I had the opportunity to work with a number of operators who were home either from Afghanistan or Iraq and were sort of decompressing from deployment, training, getting back in shape, getting into that recovery zone such that they could then go back and do their jobs again. So it was just a lot of physical preparation. And it was interesting. One of the things we work on a lot with Olympic athletes is getting ready for the Olympics. And funny enough, when you go to the Olympics, then the 3 weeks before you actually arrive, you don't really train that hard. Mm-hmm. You actually do a lot less. And that's called tapering. You decrease the physiological stress so that their body can hyperadapt, they can recover, regenerate, and then perform super well at the Olympics. And that's almost exactly what we were doing with a number of these soldiers. So when they came home, they were tired, they were exhausted, they were burned out, they were fatigued. We allowed them to recover and regenerate, and then we built training programs to enable them to get back into shape mentally, physically, emotionally, and then start training hard again such that they're able to go and be able to function again in the future. So it's very much taking everything that we learned with Olympic athletes and helping those people recover mentally, physically, emotionally, and then prepare for being able to get back to the careers that many of them really do love. So it was a fun group to work with, interesting. One of my grad students that I had the opportunity to work with did some work in nutrition for soldiers as well, which we try to incorporate, and pulling it all together was a real challenge, but a lot of fun to work with those people. They were awesome.
Very cool. So let's talk about Powerhouse. Why did you write this book, and who's it for?
It's interesting. This was book number 5, and I'm sure that if you told my grade 8 English teacher that I would be writing 5 books, he would have a nervous breakdown, because it's certainly not my plan. But about halfway through the pandemic, I was kind of looking around and doing a lot of virtual public speaking and coaching people, and really felt like people were tired, they were burned out, they were struggling, they were fatigued, like just that exhaustion, right? That languishing, that the blahs that everybody was faced with for a host of different reasons. And as a physiologist, as a researcher, and as someone who loves sort of deconstructing challenges, I was like, okay, so what's actually going on here? Fundamentally, I think it's a lack of energy. And when we're tired, when we're burned out, when we're fatigued, when we're exhausted, we just don't have enough energy to be able to do what we want to do. And I was like, okay, so where do we get energy from? Well, that's from our mitochondria, little structures that you probably heard about in grade 10 biology. They're present in every single cell in the body. They're in your brain, they're in your muscles, they're in your digestive tract, they're in your skin, they're in your eyes, they're everywhere. And they break down the foods that you eat to create the energy that you use to move and think. They're also very involved in fighting off illnesses. They keep you healthy. Dysfunctional mitochondria that don't work very well, are probably involved in cancer, heart disease, even mental challenges like depression or anxiety. So we know that they're fundamental to our performance, they're fundamental to our energy levels, they're really important for our health. And I figured that if we could optimize our mitochondria, then that could help us to overcome this grand challenge that so many of us have been faced with over the last few years, which is that burnout and languishing, and get people back to flourishing and get people back to thriving again. Mm-hmm. And there are many different ways in which we can do that. But that's why I wrote that book. That's why I dug into it pretty deeply, and why I was so excited to sort of dig into it.
So mitochondria are what? Microorganisms? They're cells unto themselves, or what?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They're actually cells within our cells. So probably 1.6 billion years ago, we think about that time, there were two different types of cells on planet Earth. One used oxygen for energy and one used sugar for energy. The sugar burning cell ate an oxygen using cell, and instead of digesting it and breaking it down, they actually started working together. Mitochondria are the remnants of the oxygen burning cell. And that new cell, the one that burned oxygen and sugar, had this massive evolutionary advantage, and it led to the proliferation of life on planet Earth. And now on planet Earth, almost every single life form, except a few different types of bacteria, have mitochondria in them. And that's how we create energy. And that's how we became able to get out of the oceans and walk around and grow and move and think and build. And so, yeah, we all have mitochondria in all of our cells. There's cells within our cells, and they're known as the powerhouse of the cell, and they create our energy.
So you saw everyone practically just languishing and said, okay, how can we give everyone a shot of adrenaline in a sense? Let's go to the mitochondria. How did things unfold where you're like, okay, I'm going to write this book? How did you approach it?
Yeah. It's funny. It's almost like trying to give everybody that shot of adrenaline. And actually what adrenaline does is it supercharges your mitochondria. It makes them work stronger and faster. So your analogy there was actually absolutely perfect. Like, it's exactly what happens when we need a little bit of a shot of energy. So I began with the very basics. So getting back to oxygen, mitochondria use oxygen to burn the foods that we eat to create energy. How do we get more oxygen? Well, the answer to that is breath. Right? And long, slow, deep breaths to get oxygen into our lungs and into our blood. But at the same time, get rid of the carbon dioxide that your mitochondria produce as waste products from metabolism. So the first thing was digging into breath work. And I know that's a really popular topic right now. A lot of people have been thinking about breath work. It's incredibly powerful. It changes the way your brain functions, changes the way that your body functions. If you think about, watching a child sigh, right? Like, and they just relax. Or on the other end of the spectrum, if you look at a tennis player hitting a ball during a game, they might grunt or exhale really, really hard, right? So when we take those long, slow exhales, the body calms down. When we do those explosive exhales, the body psychs up. So we can actually manipulate our physiology and our psychology by deliberately changing our breathing patterns. The key things really being that we could all sort of try right now is those long exhales calm us down. The sharp, fast exhales psych us up. It's pretty cool. And it's interesting we can manipulate our physiology and our psychology deliberately just by using our breath.
It's interesting. As you were saying that, I was thinking to myself that during the pandemic, I know for me, I did not find myself breathing like that. In fact, I was doing the opposite. Like,
yeah.
Very much so.
We all were.
Yeah. Yeah. So breath. Okay. So there's breath. And throughout the book, you talk about that and have ways we can increase that and powerhouse that in a sense. Okay. So what else? How else did you structure the book?
Yeah, the next step was, so you're breathing, you're getting oxygen into your body, you're relaxing, you're getting yourself into that ideal performance state, right? We've built that foundation. The next thing was to get people back into and reminded of the power of movement. And I'm an exercise physiologist. I have coached Olympic athletes and, you know, pushed people to the limits of climbing mountains and running across deserts and all those sorts of things. I've done the blood work and all the heart rate zones. But ultimately, when I just dug into it and explored it further, I realized that the foundation of human health and well-being is movement. But movement in not such a way like we're going to the gym and sweating and hitting our heart rate zones, but just generally being physically active throughout the course of the day. Motion is lotion, as 11-time Ironman triathlete Lisa Bentley often says. We just move our bodies, and when we contract our muscles, when we move our bodies through a range of motion by walking, by stretching, gardening, housework, yoga, if you want to go to the gym, that's fine. If you want to go to the for a run or a bike ride, that's also incredible. But it's just general physical movement that sparks the creation of new mitochondria, which then give you more energy. It's almost like you have to spend a little bit of energy in order to get so much more back. The converse is also true. If we sit too much, if we don't move, your body does not maintain structures that it isn't using. It'll break down your mitochondria and get rid of them, because they do cost energy to maintain. So momentum, inertia makes a difference here. If we've been sitting for a long time, doing that very first walk is going to require a massive amount of energy just to get out the door and go out for 5 minutes. But if once you've been doing it for 3 weeks, everything gets easier and easier and easier. It's mental, it's physical and emotional, because your mitochondria drive not just your body, but also your brain as well. So the next step was move more.
When you're talking about movement, are you talking about like intentional movement, like, okay, I'm going to go out and take a walk or the gym or whatever? You mentioned gardening too. Or are you also just talking about our day-to-day walking, going to the store, whatever? Oh, I'm fine. Okay.
Yeah. And so like, I'm the guy that like wrote the workouts and said, you have to be at a heart rate 142 for 62 minutes, right? Whatever it was. Like, I've done all of that. And I realize now in hindsight, I mean, it's fine for trying to win a medal at the Olympics, but for the vast majority of us, simply moving counts. Going and getting groceries counts. You're getting up, you're moving, you're carrying boxes, you're moving things up and, you know, up and down the stairs of your house, you're carrying bags. You may be, in a different context, running for a bus or walking up and down the stairs at work. All of it counts. It was really interesting. We did so many studies at SickKids on exercise medicine or exercise for various different chronic diseases. And the studies looked at endurance training or strength training or flexibility training. They all work. They all improve outcomes in almost every single chronic disease that you can look at: cancer, heart disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, you know, even mental health challenges like depression. Exercise works. The problem is when the studies finished, the kids stopped exercising. And so we were like, well, that doesn't really help. And then Dr. Jane Schneiderman dug through the data and found that the kids who were the most generally habitually physically active were the ones who had the slowest rate of disease progression. We looked at cystic fibrosis and then a number of different other conditions as well. And we found that over and over and over again, the kids who were taking the most steps throughout the entire day were the ones who had the best outcomes, simply like the ones who were sitting the least. And we all know, like in this era right now with phones and video games and all those other things, and you know, adults, we need to sit at our computers to do work. Many of us, it's hard to get that in. So we know this intuitive. We feel better when we go for a walk. We feel so good when we stretch a little bit. But when we, now it's hard. We need to remind ourselves to do that and build that practice into our lives. And literally anything counts. And research at McMaster University has shown that as little as 1 to 3 minutes of exercise a day, 1 to 3 minutes will actually make things better. Mm-hmm. So the answer is more, but doesn't matter where you are. I don't need you getting to 10,000 steps. If you're at 1,000 steps, no big deal. Get to 1,200. That's mm-hmm. what we're looking for people to think about.
Like do something.
Anything, right? Like just literally do anything. If you're lying down, sit up. If you're sitting up, stand. If you're standing, go for a walk, right? If just like we just nudge things up a little bit at a time and give yourself massive amounts of grace and love and support and talk to yourself as you're doing this, encourage yourself. And the other thing that really helps is just sort of practical things we can do is getting support from the people around you. Go for a walk with a friend, do a walking meeting, stand during a phone call at work. I know often if I'm at a boardroom table in a conference or something like that, like I'll put my books down and my notes down, but then stand behind the chair. So I'm not sitting for that hour or two that mm-hmm. I'm in that boardroom. People are like, what are you doing, Greg? I'm like, I'm trying not to die. I'm just going to stand here. You guys all sit where we'll be good. But yeah, anything counts. Anything counts.
So again, going back to the mitochondria, what does this movement do to the mitochondria?
So what happens when we move is that you break down molecules like carbohydrates, proteins, fats, the foods that you have eaten to create energy that happens inside your mitochondria. And then waste products are created. So if you break down sugars, for example, you'll create little tiny acids. Maybe some potassium. If you go for a run, you will break down energy. There will be waste products like carbon dioxide that are produced. Those waste products then go out into your body and they interact with your DNA, your genetic code. And they tell your DNA, hey, we're exercising, we're lifting weights, we're walking, we're running, we're climbing. And your DNA then codes for structures that help you do those things more easily in the future. So if you lift mm-hmm. weights, you code for more muscle tissue. If you go for a walk, you code for better heart, lungs, blood, and mitochondria. So we build new mitochondria in response to the waste products that are created. They're called inductors in physiology. In response to those inductors, in response to those waste products, you actually get stimulated to grow new structures inside your body that make it easier for you to do those activities in the future. It's almost like you're stressing yourself out mm-hmm. by doing a little bit of exercise, but then your body notices that stress and builds itself up to be able to better handle that stress in the future.
Eustress
is that positive stress. Distress is that negative stress, right? Too okay. much stress is a problem because you don't mm-hmm. have the time to rebuild yourself. Eustress being EU stress. It's a technical term. You can write it up. I mean, negative stress is that it's overwhelming. It's relentless. You never get a break. Eustress is that positive challenge, the opportunity to do things that you love, like, you know, speaking or a meeting or writing a test or doing something cool and interesting. However, even eustress can become problematic if we never take any breaks. If you can balance stress plus rest, that's what leads to growth. If you want to explore that idea a little bit further, I think Brad Stelberg and Steve Magnus wrote a book called Peak Performance, and that was the foundation of that book. But yeah, it's that stress plus rest equals growth that's magic. It's just when stress is chronic and relentless and nonstop that we end up in this mm-hmm. really challenging state, which, by the way, I think we've been in for the last 3 or 4 years. We certainly were during the pandemic. You think, just think about the news cycle and everything that was coming at us over and over and over again. So it's really important that we build in those breaks. And in many cases, exercise can be that break. Like think about going to yoga or think about going for a walk and leaving your phone at home or just playing in the park with your children for an hour, right? Like exercise mm-hmm. can serve this purpose as well.
Let me just remind everyone, I'm speaking with Dr. Greg Wells. We're talking about his new book, Powerhouse. I'm going to pause here to thank our sponsors. All right, Greg. So we have breath. We have movement. What do we have next?
The next one is thrive and energize. So we want to have the energy to be able to do what we love in our lives. And the idea that I wanted to share here was the idea of hormesis, which in physiology means a little bit is good, a lot is not. I'm glad you brought up the idea of eustress and distress. Like a little bit of stress helps you to be better. Just think about a little bit of exercise, you get fitter. Too much exercise, you get injured and sick. Other examples of that might be cold. There's so much information right now and, you know, stuff on social media about cold water immersion or, you know, mm-hmm. the cold plunges and stuff like that, right? A little bit of cold is actually quite beneficial for you, but a lot of cold, you get hypothermia and die. Same thing for sauna, right? On the other end of the spectrum, a little bit of sauna a few times a week or a little bit of like three hot baths a week is really great, actually extends your life and decreases your risk of a host of different chronic diseases, but a lot is not. You can get hyperthermia and also die. Salt would be another example, right? Fasting would be another example. A little bit is good, a lot is not. I'm just trying to help people bring a little bit of balance back to their lives. It's not sexy. It's not going to get a lot of share, you know, likes or anything on Instagram, because it is the opposite of what extreme sort of stuff gets thrown out there on social these days. But really, we're just looking for balance. It's that balance of doing something that's good for you, resting, but then also getting out there and doing what you need to do at a high level. So a little bit of stress is good, a lot is not. And when we get that going, when we get the balance in our nutrition, balance in our sleep, balance in our stress, balance in our exercise, which admittedly is challenging to do these days when we are so busy with so much stuff to do, that is actually what enables us to have more energy to direct towards the things that we care about the most in our lives. That could be carpentry, that could be your art, could be music, could be drama, could be learning something new, it could be your job if you're so fortunate, could be training for an athletic event. But once we have that energy, that's what enables us then to get out of that state of languishing that we have all been in for the last few years mm-hmm. and into the zone of flourishing and thriving. So just looking for people to build practices that enable them to have more energy, which, you know, for example, give yourself permission to get some sleep, get out into the sunlight a few minutes a day, get in those workouts. It doesn't have to be hard. It can just be a little bit of physical activity, eat the healthier foods, you know, try a 30-second cold shower, take a warm bath a few times a week, whatever gives you energy. Let's just try to build a few of those practices back into our lives.
You were someone who was on the Olympic trajectory, right? This very competitive person. And it's interesting to hear you talking about moderation in a sense. But
it's hard-earned wisdom, unfortunately, I think.
Well, it's very interesting to me. I mean, obviously, when you're, I'm assuming when you're training at that level, you've got to be smart about how you're doing it. But when we think of people at that elite level, we're thinking about just these powerhouse driven people, which is not what you're talking about here. You're talking about, right?
Yeah. You know, but it's interesting, even that group, if I look back to, you know, training for the Olympics in the 80s and 90s, when I was trying to do it, to date myself a little bit, it really was just about who could train the most. It was all about volume of work. Could you train for 5, 6, 7 hours a day? And if you could, and you could survive that, then congratulations, you go to the Olympics. But careers were short. Mental mm-hmm. health was not awesome. A lot of illness and a lot of injuries. And if you think about an old athlete at that time would be 25. Well, now the approach is quite different. And the approach is not so much volume of training, it's quality of training. And that world-class training then gets alternated with deep rest and recovery. So we might have 2 or 3 massages a year. You know, you might get a massage at the competition where you're trying out for the Olympic team, and like that was it. Now, the idea would be that you're probably getting at least 1 massage a week.
Yeah.
Back then, we would carb load as much pasta as possible. Now, it's all about plant-based and eating the rainbow and phytonutrients and antioxidants and all of these wonderful anti-inflammatory compounds that we can get from a host of different types of food that keep you healthy mentally and physically. And then also making sure that we have purpose and passion and mission so that we are mentally healthy, we are on point, and there's a reason for doing what we do. And that isn't just present, that new approach of alternating world-class performance and training and preparation with deep recovery and regeneration and rest, that idea is now also making its way into business. It's making its way into world-class performers in music, in a host of different professions, if you will, that we're pursuing as part of our search for an incredible life. And so, yeah, that moderation now, that hard-earned wisdom about how to be able to have sustainable, healthy, high performance, where we actually reach our true potential as humans. And that's really what it's all about. And it's not about volume of work. It's about doing really world-class, you know, reaching your potential, whatever that happens to be. And world-class can be anything. Doesn't mean that you're top 10 in the world. It simply means that you are doing your very best as often as you can, because it's what you want to do. It's what you care about. It's what you love. And then using the rest of your life to enable you to do that more often at a higher level. That's really what the approach that we're recommending these days. And I think it's a lot healthier mentally, physically, emotionally, and even spiritually to some extent.
Who'd you write the book for? I mean, you mentioned people in the pandemic just numbing out, but who did you write it for?
Yeah, you know, every time that I write a book, I end up trying to write it to one specific person, actually. And that has really served me quite well in the past. I've written it for dear friends, and you know, The Ripple Effect was written to a couple of my really close friends who are, you know, high performers, but you know, had a family life and a career. And I was like, how do I help them? And that went really, really well. This book, I think, is for my kids. And I've got two of them. They're 8 and 13. I know that at some point, maybe in the future, might be 10 years from now, they'll pick up the book and check out, what was my dad thinking 10 years ago? But this was, I was so worried about the future, and I was really concerned about what I was seeing. And although the book is written for a larger audience, and certainly not for an 8-year-old at this point, but Ingrid has picked up on some of the things that we talk about. She has been absorbing some of the information, and I'm just trying to create that world such that when they grow up, it's a healthy place where they can reach their potential. And I've always been involved with kids my entire career, either as an athlete or, you know, as a coach, and then as a physiologist, and then as a researcher at the hospital. And so this one was very much, I think, written for, you know, trying to create a healthier world for my kids to grow up into. But hopefully it's a book that my kids will pick up and read when it's time for them to, you know, really go after their dreams.
When you say you write it for one person or a couple people, is that something you share with those people, or is that just a conception in your mind?
It's very much a conception in my mind. I have subsequently told people, like, hey, I actually wrote this book to you. Like, I actually typed as if I was having a conversation with those people. I have let them know, but it's not during the process. It's often years later that I will let them know that.
So we have breathe, move, energize, and then thrive.
Thrive. Now it's time to put it all into practice, like make your life awesome. And there's a simple idea, people, places, and pursuits, in order for you to actionalize this, turn this into action. I just made up a word there. It doesn't exist. Take this and turn it into action. People, places, and pursuits. I'd love for people to think now, as we move forwards, as we emerge from this pandemic and navigate a world that's very uncertain still to this day, and will probably remain to some degree uncertain moving forwards, is who are the people that you want to be spending more time with? Personally and professionally, who are the people who elevate you? Who are the people that bring you joy? Who are the people that you uplift as well? And if you can find 5-ish people in your personal life who bring you joy, who elevate you, then let's try to figure out, how do we spend a little bit more time with those people? They'll probably be different from the 5 people who elevate you professionally and who you also serve. So I love that 5 and 5, right? 5 personal, 5 professional, people that we are going to deliberately spend more time with. This might be people that encourage you to do your workouts, or people that you love just to talk to, people that get you outside into nature, people that encourage you to take that trip or take the course or practice the skill or, you know, submit the proposal, like whatever it happens to be. It's the people who elevate you, the people who challenge you, the people who uplift you, the people who encourage you. We want so much more of that in our lives. Plus, we need to be working on making sure that we serve others personally and professionally as well to help them elevate. By doing that, almost by extension, you will have to then choose probably who are you going to spend a little bit less time with, and who are the people maybe that are the energy vampires that we want to not necessarily, you know, like cut out of your life or anything like that. Maybe, you know, you just reallocate your time towards the people that elevate you and the people who that you elevate also. So that's the people part of it. Places is another really interesting thing. You know, during the pandemic, we were confined, many of us, and certainly where I live, we were confined and in some place sheltering in place at home. We lost the ability to move around and travel. And it's funny, when something is taken away from you, how much you then value it when those freedoms are returned to us. And I discovered that I love being outside. Like, I love nature. I love going for the walks and the bike rides and climbing and being around the trees. That's what truly elevates my psychology and physiology. My wife, Judith, discovered that she loves being around people. And fortunately, she's a chiropractor, acupuncturist, massage therapist. And so that is her job. She interacts with people all day long, one-on-one. We now know I need to be in nature as often as possible. And Judith has to have those personal contacts with people, those deep, meaningful relationships. And so the places part of it is massive. And I would encourage people to think about, like, what are the places that make you happy? The places that give you energy? Is it your cottage? Is it the park near your house? Is it a room in your home? Is it a chair in your home? Like wherever it happens to be, if you know that there are certain places that bring you to life, then let's deliberately plan on spending some time in those places. And that might be daily, weekly, monthly, annually, whenever you get a chance. Might be even every couple of years you get to go there. Those places are really important for us to take some time to visit, take some time and spend there, because that's what elevates us. And again, sometimes we only learn this the hard way. And I certainly learned that the hard way, how much I value being in nature, which is why I'm sitting where I am sitting here today doing this podcast. And then the final piece of the puzzle is that the pursuits, which is, what do you love? What is it that elevates you? Where does your true potential lie? What do you love doing that serves the world, that elevates others, that and if it happens to be your art, and if it happens to be a hobby, if it happens to be your work, if it happens to be your practice, whatever it is, that's totally cool. But when we are aware of what our pursuits are, some people also often refer to this as your passion. We craft our passion. I don't know if it's discovered so much as crafted, right? We craft our pursuits, craft our passions, craft our interests. And spending our time on those, I think, is, again, really important. So we've done the breath work to get oxygen in your body. You've moved to build your capacity mentally, physically, and emotionally. You're energized now. You've got the energy to do what you love. Let's allocate that attention towards the things that are the most meaningful to us in our lives, because where our attention goes, energy will then flow there, and that part of your life will grow and expand, and who knows where that will take you in the future. But ultimately, that's the path that I want everyone to consider, maybe moving towards, even if it's just a tiny bit. We can all make these little micro shifts in our lives that hopefully make our lives a little bit more magical every single day.
I love what you're saying. I find it very inspiring. And one of the things I really love about it is that you're kind of bringing an intentionality to what we're doing, how we're breathing, if we're breathing, how we're moving. And there's something very empowering about this. You know, it's, we all know we need to move and blah, blah, blah. But really, how many of us are taking those long breaths? I know we have to really be intentional about it. And I feel your book is really a prescriptive for that. It's like, it's an inspiring invitation.
Thank you. That means the world to me that's the way that you've interpreted it. And I'm so psyched that's the energy that's coming across. And it really is about that. But the other interesting thing is, it's almost like we have to give ourselves permission that it's okay to do this. Mm-hmm. It's okay to take the walk. It's okay to pause for 5 minutes and take a few breaths. It's okay to make yourself the healthy lunch and bring it and have that at the office or wherever it is that you're going. And digging into the reasons why we don't give ourselves permission to do this often uncovers some reasons as to why we hold ourselves back, or why we don't give ourselves permission, or why we find it so difficult to build these new habits. So it's a practice, and it's not going to happen all at once. This is an ongoing process that we go along. It is an invitation on a journey. This is, for me, it's a 10-year project that I'm into at this point. And I don't mean to say that in a daunting way, that you're not going to get any results for 10 years if you go down this journey. Certainly, I think that you will see some benefits right away. But these benefits will improve consistently over time. Sometimes they're easier, sometimes they're harder. There's good seasons in life, there's difficult seasons in life. So we're just trying to generally move ourselves in the right direction over a long period of time. So it's an invitation. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's have fun. And then I would encourage everybody, let's just give yourself permission to do one really cool thing that elevates you, that elevates the people around you, that makes your life a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And then see if you can do that consistently over a long period of time.
Yeah, I love that idea of giving permission to ourselves. That resonates with me a lot because I don't. I think you hit the nail on the head.
I don't either. I struggle with it, right? Like I'm like, after this podcast, I would like to give myself permission to go for a bike ride because it's beautiful, but it's going to take me a couple hours and it's going to put some other things on the back burner. But you know what? It's okay because the other stuff can wait. And this is really important. Health and well-being comes first. But yeah, no, I recognize it. It's not easy and give yourself that grace. It's all good.
I appreciate it. Well, look, man, you are just one inspiring dude. I appreciate you coming on here. What's the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Yeah, the easiest way is just through the website, drgregwells.com. Podcast is there. Social media is there. Books are there. Our new app called Vivio is there. It sends out 1% tips every day. So check all that stuff out. We'd be honored. Flip me a note through the website. Let me know that you heard me on this podcast. I'd be super thrilled to answer any questions that you have.
Awesome. All right. We'll have all that linked up here at the show notes page at the podcast. Greg, awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm so honored, grateful. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you're interested to learn more about what I do, head on over to the Books Read Thrive podcast.com. That's the Books Read Thrive podcast.com. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Dr. Greg Wells podcast. If you found this show informative and helpful, check out my blog at drgregwells.com for additional insights and resources on health and human performance. I update the blog a couple times a month. To stay up to date on the latest tips, articles, and videos, be sure to follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells. My goal on social is to keep your health and wellness and positivity at the forefront of your mind, and so I would be thrilled to connect with you there. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing to the podcast. That helps us out a ton. And leave a review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and helps me to continue to produce valuable content that's relevant to all of you. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. That helps a ton as well. And that brings this week's show to an end. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Have a great week, everyone.